Welcome to Bon Jovi Discussions. Today I have my buddy who is quite a regular on this podcast, Kevin. How are you, buddy?
I'm fantastic. I just finished, literally just finished the last episode and jumped on.
So let's just give people some background here. So the documentary premiered at 12 a.m. Eastern time on Hulu for us, Disney Plus overseas. And so I stayed up all night long. I was gonna try to sleep from like 4 p.m. to midnight just to kind of get some sleep, and I couldn't sleep because I was so excited for this documentary because we've been waiting for it for years, and I was not gonna let 6 7 hours of sleep get me in the way of not seeing the premiere of it at midnight, so I stayed up. So 12 a.m. came around. As soon as 12 a.m. clicked, I refreshed the page, and I literally did not leave my couch for 5 hours. I did not fight any kind. Usually, I'd be tired and fallen asleep, but I did not have to fight any sleep. I did not leave my couch. I stayed on that couch for 5 hours straight watching it, and the time just flew by. And we'll get into the documentary here in a second, but literally the I just finished, we both just finished the documentary episode like 5 minutes ago, and the tears just dried in my eyes, and we got so much to unload here. But man, what a fucking documentary that was. I'm not saying this because they're my favorite band, and literally probably the best thing that they've ever put out. And best way to that they've ever told their story. And we'll get into everything, but I'm telling you, it is so in depth. And for people listening, I know Kevin, you want to talk here. So I'm taking all the air in the room here. For anyone that's listening to this podcast episode right now, and if you have not watched the documentary, I'm going to do you a huge favor. If you don't want any spoiler alerts, this entire episode is going to be spoiler alerts. I tried to figure out the best way possible to kind of talk about this documentary. It's going to be a long episode. I'm going to go from the very beginning, episode one, all the way to the end. So if you don't want any spoiler alerts, you haven't watched it yet, watch this podcast later. Anyway, buddy, I took up a lot of space before we
No.
kind of.
I you were saying I agreed with 100%. This was everything and more that I wanted just as a fan, right? Like this was, the equivalent, like Bon Jovi fans equivalent of the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League, basically. And if you know that reference, you know that reference. But this documentary is a love letter to the fans and it's made for the fans. And I really got that message. Like there were no punches held back. There were no nothing was hidden away or anything like that. It wasn't a puff piece. It was just real, honest, and it's something that I would love to rewatch again,
Oh, I'm gonna watch it later tonight with my wife. She slept while I watched it for the first time, but like you said too, there was no holding back in this documentary whatsoever. It was really, let me say this, the band has always kept a very tight inner circle where they wouldn't air their dirty laundry. They wouldn't tell us this. They wouldn't tell this kind of kept things in house, and I respect that. And with this documentary, it is a obviously it's not a tell all because there's some things that they'll just take to their grave, and I respect that. But this real, I mean, especially about Richie, John's vocals, the vulnerability that John shows in this documentary, the whole band shows, is just phenomenal. And they really open up, and we'll get into all that, but like last night before the documentary premiere, I rewatched When We Were Beautiful because I haven't seen that in the longest time. And for people that anyone that's listening to this podcast probably knows what I'm talking about, but just to be safe, that was a documentary that was it was filmed in 2008 following the Band on the Lost Highway tour, and it got released in 2009 as part of The Circle. And but it follows the Band on the Lost Highway tour, and that documentary was more focused on John. And I love the documentary, and I respect all of it. But that documentary was really focused on John and how he was the leader and his vision. And, really, they had the band, but the band talked about John. And so apart from that, this documentary really centralized the whole band. People that were connected to the band, like Doc McGee, Obie, Matt, all those guys. And so that was really refreshing, kind of, to be able to watch that last night and then watch the new documentary and just seeing how the whole band tells their parts. I thought that was refreshing. It wasn't just about John and all that, which, like I said, I respect what we, When We Were Beautiful was, but this was so much better than when We Were Beautiful,
Zip code better, zip codes.
So, well, buddy, let's dive right into the first
Yeah.
episode. So the first episode was called New Jersey Versus Everybody. And essentially this episode was focused, it starts out with, the opening just kind of shocked me. Like, you see John with like this big beard, and you don't know that it's post-surgery yet, vocal surgery yet. And you just see John down in his basement home. And I'll say this as a quick side note, what I would pay to be in that basement to see all the Bon Jovi memorabilia, the cassette tapes, the demos, the video, everything. What I would give just to even spend like a half hour in there. But anyway, so it opens up with John,
Hide in one of the closets and never leave.
hiding one of the boxes. But it shows John like his big bushy beard, and he's going through cassette tapes, and there's like a, I like how it starts out too, with the isolated vocals of Runaway, like a very raw version. I think it's like even, it's not the same the same vocal version that's on the 40th anniversary of the debut album. I think it's a post demo of the first demo that we heard on the 40th. Like, I think it's more of a progressive demo of Runaway, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, I'm sure there's some reverb thrown in on there anyway. That's like the rule in like production.
Yeah.
More reverb equals better, always.
Yeah. And I had Alex Viriato on the previous episode, and he was the one who was the lead producer and lead editor on the documentary. And he says that, he was given all these tracks, and they were able to isolate, vocals or instruments and make it fit for this. And they did just a phenomenal job on that. Alex was just a great guest and gave so much insight on everything, and just his excitement made me even more excited for it. And a lot of other Bon Jovi fans said the same thing after listening to that podcast. And then, so, after they show, John in his house going over the cassettes, they go into, like this big live version of Lay Your Hands on Me from the New Jersey tour. And I thought that was such a cool way to start it, like that energy, and Tico's pounding the drums, and the band just comes right in. But so when you first started watching the documentary, were you like taken back by like John's appearance, like the, because we didn't never really see him like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I
I
was
mean,
like,
it'd be cool if he did, if he brought the beard back, every now and again, it'd be cool. I think he'd look cool in the beard, on stage.
I thought
Kind
it
of
looks
like
cool.
six,
And so it actually starts out with like this whole, see, this documentary isn't from the beginning, in a way that it is, from the beginning to current day, but it
Yeah,
actually goes
there's
current,
two now.
it goes current day,
There's
looking back, fast forward to, like, it's so, you understand the flow of it, I think, once you get to the final ending, because it kind of follows two journeys in one story. It follows John's vocal problems from the beginning to the end to current day. And then it also, the other story is from the early days up until, current day. So it has two stories in one path, if that makes sense. So, the documentary, it starts out, the band in February 22, doing rehearsals for the upcoming April 22 tour. And they rehearsed at that Meadowlands Arena. And what I really smiled and was really happy to see was how happy John was to be on that stage again, because keep in mind, John hasn't toured since 2019. So it's been, pretty much 3 years since they've toured. The pandemic happened, so they weren't able to do that touring tour with Bryan Adams. And so I think he just looks so happy to be on the stage. Remember, he's like running around the stage and just, doing his, the champ is, all that stuff. What I thought was interesting too was the whole 4 days, because usually he would say, he said a few times in the documentary, every tour they would rehearse for 4 days and that's it. But this tour took 3 weeks. And so it showed you how serious he was on working on his vocals and trying to be the best that he could be to tour again. What did you think of the whole rehearsal footage and,
For me, that's like my wet dream. Like I love seeing rehearsal footage. I would have loved to see them, work on the deep cuts because it's been very well reported that there were a lot more deep cuts rehearsed on that for that tour that never got played. So I would have loved to see them, work out, certain songs like In and Out of Love that, I know that they rehearsed, and other songs as well,
Yeah, absolutely. And then we fast forward to March of 22, which is just a month later, and then you kind of get a more of an insight of what John's going through with his vocal issues. And so I think he's in his New York City apartment, and he's taking vocal lessons via Zoom. And I actually thought those vocals sounded pretty good, him just practicing. But then like the whole laser thing was like, oh my God, like I feel like so bad for him that he has to go through that. And so they have all that technology. And then we go, so then they start the actual story of the band, and they start, obviously way back when John was a high school kid, it was pretty much him and David's story. And what I did like about the documentary, you know me, I'm like a Jovian encyclopedia. Like they're like, other than what the band has never talked about, I know like everything about the band. And I say that with bragging rights. And but with this, like obviously, you have to tell the story that we've heard a million times. All the bands of John were in, how John and David met, how the band formed. We know all of that. So obviously, you have to tell that story for the general public. But there were actually key things in here that I never knew about. And what else was cool too is that they showed photos that were never before seen, footage, audio. And so I thought that was kind of pretty cool. But they talk about, John and David starting out together. There was a trying to read my notes here. I'm a sloppy handwriter. So I then it goes back to rehearse. So this is where it gets confusing because 1 second you're at rehearsals in 22, then you're talking about the band's history, then you're back to rehearsals,
Just the
and
parallel story, it's common for a live documentaries. It's just, hey, this is happening while this is happening, and
yeah. But
then
you're kind of getting like 1 second I'm really getting into the whole vocal story and the rehearsals, and then they pull me away from that. They put me into this. Their origin story, and then I'm getting into that. Then I'm not complaining. I liked how they did. Once you get to the final episode, it all makes sense. But anyway, so fast forward, during the rehearsals, there was one quote that John said that really, like made me open my goggles. Wow. And he says, "I'm not going to get any bigger," which means, as far as success, he's never going to write another "Living Our Prayer," and so forth. But then he also says, "But I want to maintain our legacy." I thought that was really cool when he said that.
That's a good quote, and I think Legendary, for example, adds to that legacy, and I'm very confident that this new record will be in that A tier of their legacy with obviously it's gonna be I think it's gonna be a lot higher. I rank This House Is Not for Sale pretty high, but I think it'll be higher than that. But it's not going to be, up on top as, New Jersey, Slippery, Crush, Have a Nice Day. Maybe it will be. I don't know. I hope it is. But, based on, everything that we've heard so far, yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty big record and it's going to add to that legacy. And, there probably won't be another song that's big as Living on a Prayer.
Yeah,
Probably
exactly.
won't be another in my life. And I'm okay with that. But
And
maybe there is. I don't know. We don't know. We haven't heard the album yet.
exactly. And I think John is also happy where he's at now. Like he admits he's never going to be as, he's not going to get any bigger. but he likes where he's at right now. Another thing that I liked about the rehearsals too is they were kind of talking about the set list, and I'm trying to remember how long.
Yeah, that was another point. It was originally 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah, but how long was were the? I'm trying to remember.
220. It was like 220.
I think they started around 8:30, give or take.
Yeah, it was like 8:20, and then it would be done at 10:40. I did 10 shows on that tour. I had the times memorized to a T. And the set list on average were like 22 songs.
So
So.
I'd like to know, like you said, like we know they did some deep cuts and tried and stuff, but I wonder what songs that they did take out of that, or if they took any out at all.
Well, here's what I do know. I remember in the documentary, Everett was like, "Yeah, like you should like just pick play either Lost Highway or A Whole Lotta Leaving. Don't do both of them back to back." So, A Whole Lotta Leaving, the original set list, it came back later, about like halfway through the tour, I think, in Savannah. I was at that show. I mean, I love A Whole Lotta Leaving, so I was like, okay, like I'd rather. I think it replaced We Don't Run in the acoustic set. So I'm like, you know what? I'll take A Whole Lotta Leaving over We Don't Run.
You know what I would say, but whole lolly. I would have
I
said,
know.
take it out,
I
exile.
feel that way about Lost Highway. Like I don't need that song. Like I think Legendary now is gonna replace Lost Highway because it
Give
has
it.
like the same feel to it. Like it
Oh
would be a
yeah.
good show opener.
Yeah. You know, but as John says in the documentary, you know, a whole lot of leaving and Lost Highway were very easy songs to sing. So I can see why he left those on set lists every night, not just on the 22 tour, but also the What About Now tour and This House tour. One last thing I want to say about the rehearsal footage was seeing John. You know, we've never seen John this vulnerable, you know, and he
Yeah.
also talked about later in the documentary how he's always been worried to show his vulnerability and his hardships because he doesn't want people to see that. And so this documentary was really the first time that we got to see John so vulnerable. So you know, they show the rehearsal footage and you could just see John struggling. Like there's even a point where John tells the whole band, "Hey guys, nothing you guys did, this is for me, but let's do the song from the top again." And he wanted to focus on his issues and to sing that again.
Yeah.
Was there anything you wanted to say about rehearsals before I move on in the episode?
Yeah, it was actually a point that you said about, you know, him not wanting to show that vulnerability. I get that. You know, it's one thing, you know, when you're with the boys, right? You know, hey, like, you know, something. I know we've had conversations like that before, you know, where I've hit you up. I'm like, hey, listen, I need to talk about something. But it's
Absolutely.
another thing when. I'm trying to be very careful with my words here. It's another thing because I don't want this to come out wrong, you know, because a lot of people watch this podcast and I want this to come out right. So if this comes out wrong, then, you know, I'll tweak it. But basically, when you're running a big organization, right, you're employing, you know, hundreds of people, you know, and you're the leader, you need to have your game face on, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, like John has said in recent interviews, back then it wasn't good for, you know, it's like look at our grandparents, for example. Back then it wasn't good for men to show their feelings and they had to show that they were tough and everything like that. But nowadays it's socially, and it's good that it is. It's socially acceptable to be vulnerable and to say, "Hey, man, I'm not doing good today mentally, or I'm depressed, or I'm sad." And I, you know, it's good that people are reaching out now. But back then you really couldn't do that. And so I think it's great that people are doing that now. And so move up, oh, go ahead.
I agree, and you know, it's always good to have those friends. Every person should have friends that, hey, you know, I'm going through something, and you know, we have a really good friendship where we both of us had those conversations with each other, and both leaned on each other, you know, in times of need, and that's in the personal life, but you know, when it comes to work, like I get that mentality of, you know, hey, like, you know, you can't show weakness, especially when, you know, other people are reliant on you for, you know, when you're literally the quarterback and the CEO of, you know, a major organization that employs hundreds of people. So I get that. I get that 100%.
Absolutely. Moving on, so that they start, they go back into how the band formed, and a lot of these interviews were just John and David for the most part. And so they go all the way from, John and David in their high school days, all the bands they were in, and then it run away, how the band got signed. And then right at the very end, they show Richie, and they don't show him like they just kind of show like his boots and his guitar, and he's playing one, and 100% that's Richie. And then they showed Richie, and then that's how the first episode ends. So like each episode had such a good cliffhanger, and obviously like you just go right to the next episode to watch. Shall we get to episode two?
And
Lot
I'm
of
so
ground to
thankful.
cover.
Yeah, listen, and one thing before we get to episode two, I'm so thankful that all the episodes were dropped in one day because I hate cliffhangers and waiting till the next
I know.
week.
Yeah, me too, man. It's we're so spoiled with like the I need it now era. I can't watch cable TV because it's like to watch everything all at once. Episode two is called Nowhere to Everywhere. Obviously that title comes from, they came from nothing. They worked to become the biggest band in the world. And so, the episode starts out, backstage of the 22 tour. And I think that this is right the very first show that you were at. What was the first show? St. Louis, right?
Omaha.
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 And so they showed them backstage, and Nick, you could tell like the whole band were just excited to be there, and especially John. And then it
That's the
kind
only reason one should be excited to go to Omaha, being on a Bon Jovi show. That's the only reason.
And then we go to a next scene where John is doing a 1985 interview, and he says he's not married and everything. And then you see Alec with a kid and going, "Well, then explain us," or something like that. I've never seen that interview, and I laughed so fucking hard at that part, man. I just thought it was great. It was hilarious, because it kind of brought you, because like the very first episode is kind of heavy with the whole vocal issues and stuff like that, and then so just kind of have like some humor there you throw in. I thought that was great.
That's what I remember John talking about this, but when they were discussing Alec, after he passed away, Alec was the jokester of the group. He was the rock star of the group, basically. So
Exactly.
think about all the funny pranks that he pulled that we don't know about and we will never know about.
Exactly. And then so then they bring Richie does like maybe like a minute of, and that's one thing I wish they could have probably done was tell more of Richie's backstory, Tico's backstory, not just John and David's. And I know you're limited on time, so I get that, but it would have been kind of interesting to kind of, and obviously like fans like you and I, like we pretty much know their backstory, but
I'm
just
sure
to
it's
kind
on
of,
the cutting room floor. It's definitely on the floor.
but I never knew this, but I never knew that Richie did not like Runaway.
I did not know that either.
But and like he was like so blunt about it. He's like, don't quote because maybe I'm getting the word, but essentially, I wasn't a fan of the song and didn't like it. So that was like the very first thing that I learned in this documentary was that he did not like Runaway. And then so they introduce Doc McGee. Reading my notes here, man, I am. And his whole philosophy that I liked when Doc said that his job was to take the band to the people and not people to the band, which meant touring them all around the world and getting their live act down and opening up for all these bands and just trying to win the whole crowd over, And one story too that was interesting in there was Tico would wear a helmet because people would throw. I don't think this is at the Madison Square Garden. I think this is a different show, but people would throw quarters and nickels at the band, and Tico would wear like a helmet and it would just, hit him in the head.
I did not know that either.
Yeah.
But I'll ask you this, what do you think of like Doc's philosophy on bringing the band to the people and
I
like the
think he's absolutely right with that. Yeah, because
I agree.
it's true, like you can put out an album and stuff, but It's happened to me where, like, I never heard of this band before, but I've seen them live opening up for a band that I was seeing. I was like, oh my God, like, these guys are good. And you get into that band. And so I think that's the best way to kind of communicate with the world is playing live and showing the world, hey, this is who we are. And if that makes sense, I'm running on very low sleep. So I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Yeah, I get it, winning the crowd over. So I totally get that. Yeah. And there are many times where, I went to a show and, I was like, because think about it, the opening band is what's standing in front of you seeing the band that you want. So the opening band is already operating at a disadvantage. And it's really magical when, a band that you weren't really excited about seeing, you end up seeing and enjoying. So,
Exactly.
yeah.
And that's the thing too that John has always said. You didn't want them to open up for you because they were the best show and they learned their craft and they would steer the show. And then so the next thing they go into, how they rush 7800. And like we've heard John say so many times over the years, you have your whole life to write your first album, and then you have 6, 7 weeks to write your second. And that's how 7800 was. And they talk about how they wish they would have spent more time on that album. And I know fans like us and so many other diehards out there and people in the fandom love that album. And it's a shame because John hates it. And it's just so many good songs on there. That's an album where you can tell that they were trying to find their sound, trying to find who they were, and as songwriters, as musicians, and such an overlooked album. It's so good.
I wouldn't say it's good. It's mid, in my opinion. I
Oh
don't think it's
man.
the best album. But then again, hair like the hair metal 80s Bon Jovi isn't my favorite era of Bon Jovi. You know what I mean? So, because I'm more into like the whole 2000s aspect. So, I think, if you like those like hard my if you like the whole hair metal stuff, yeah, it's perfect for you. Like In and Out of Love is a catchy song. I was listening to it in the gym the other day. It came on shuffle and I'm like, okay, that's a good song. Tokyo Road, bum, bum, what's that one? Bum, Silent Night. Silent Night, that's a good one. It's a really good ballad. Yeah, like there's some good stuff on it, but it's my favorite.
And then they start talking about their, and this is funny too, this brings some humor, the cheesy music videos. I mean, we've known for years that they've hated and rightfully so. The music videos from the first two albums are just terrible. Like Runaway makes no sense. She Don't Know Me barely makes any sense. Only Lonely is probably the worst music video out there. Like you just like they cram like a 2 hour movie in a 3 minute music 4 minute music video, and you're like, what?
I'm so sorry. Sorry. Got it. Sorry. I'm turning this off.
Oh, that's okay. And so, but then they go into how by the third album, Slippery, that they were just going to show the world that they were the just a great live band, and this is who they were. And that they really did, because you look at videos like Bad Name and Prayer and Wild in the Streets even, and you just see a fun band happy to play live and the way they connect with their audience. And that's, I think, the way to do things like Doc says in the documentary, it didn't make any sense for them to play a cab driver and a hot dog distributor or whatever he said, and because that just didn't make any sense.
It was marketing for their live shows, basically. That's literally all the videos were. Marketing for live shows.
And then so then we fast forward to 22 again, and of course, I can't read my handwriting, so I'll skip that part. But during some of that segment, he talks about how he's happy by, I think, like the 10th show, he's happy with things. And then he starts to read reviews, and they're still bad. And you and I both know, like, people were just absolutely brutal about his.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you couldn't go to any kind of post without hearing about vocal issues. And I just felt bad. And like he even says, like, he's never really read reviews, blah, blah, blah. But for this tour, he did. and it just kind of tore him down. And they kind of show him worn out after the 22 show. I forget what show it was, but he says how happy he is to be there. And then they show you him coming up during Limitless, which is the beginning of the show. And he's happy, he's excited. And then you see him leave and he's just worn out. And I think that's the part where he goes in the back of his dressing room, lays on the ground, and just in silence, just reconfigures himself.
Yeah, I wasn't at that show. I decided not to go to Indianapolis. But I do remember. I'll Be There For You was on the set list, and he replaced it with American Reckoning.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I saw the pain on his face. That was just like, and that was really heartbreaking, honestly, because it was real. It was just really sad to see. Sorry, I'm also really tired from
Yeah, you're
after
fine, but yeah, that's we
podcast.
got a lot of ground to cover
I'm
here.
kind of at a loss for words. I'm having like Joe Biden moments
Sure,
of
sure.
senility, if you will. But what I will say is, yeah, it was really sad, seeing someone I really look up to just in pain and not being the best that he can be, but still giving everything that he could, being 100% of 80%. Really sad.
And then we go back to his vocal surgery, and then he makes a comment that I just wanted to let known here about how he has so much appreciation for the crew and the fans, and that's why he wants to be the best that he can be again. And then we go back to the 80s where they talk about Slippery. All the stories we've heard before about how Bad Name was almost given to Loverboy. And then they took it back. The prayer demo we've heard a million times. And then, just reading my notes here, man. I'm just. When they started to show how they blew up, with Slippery and like how they were still being an opener, but they were selling out shows because people wanted to see them, even though they were an opener. And then how they talk about how these bands were like, hey, can we keep Bon Jovi opening up for us? And like, no, it's time for us to go out and headline. And then all of a sudden, like, they do like a compilation of like all the band's success during that era. And you just like, I was smiling the entire time. I'm like, that's my fucking favorite band right there. That gave me a sense of pride. And then I think I'm thankful for this, just because we've seen it so many times. I'm kind of glad it, like, I'm so proud of them for it, but like, I'm glad that they really didn't ride on talking about their success. Like, they touched on it, but like, they didn't just go on and on about it. Like, they kind of just like went right into the whole burnout stage. And I'm talking during the Slippery era. I'm not talking about the New Jersey area. I'm talking, towards the end of Slippery, they were exhausted. John was taking cortisone shots for his vocals. And John even says, they weren't really enjoying the luxuries of their success. They were just go, 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 go. And, just kind of riding on that success. And then, New Jersey comes in and it's the whole conquer the whole world. And there was like no time to slow. I forget who said that, but I think it was David or Doc. And then like, there was like no time to slow down. So the Slippery tour ends. Go right into recording New Jersey, get that out there. And that album was proving yourself even more that you weren't just a one-hit wonder and so on.
For sure. Yeah, and it's important, if you're on top of the world right now, keep riding that wave. Keep building that momentum. You know what I mean? Like, momentum is a very powerful thing. Very.
And they talk about that later on in the documentary about, you like John also says too, like they wish they would have taken a break for a little bit and then go back into record New Jersey. But like you said too, for a lot of bands, especially when you're starting out and you're just hitting it big, you want to keep that momentum going. You want to keep your name out there because I hate to say it, people will move on and go to the next big artist.
Exactly.
But I really liked all the New Jersey studio, which a lot of this stuff is going to go on backstage at bonjovi.com.
I can't wait.
Really loved all the studio photos that they were showing of the band. And I never knew, and maybe I did, I just forgot about it. I did not know. I knew Richie started to write Bad Medicine on his own and I'll Be There for You, but I did not know Bad Medicine was written about a prostitute that he was dating. And he didn't realize she was a prostitute. I thought,
Classic situation, classic rock star situation.
yeah. So I thought that was funny. And so the difference with Slippery When Wet, when they weren't really focusing on the luxuries of their success, with New Jersey, they were. And I loved the story. And I didn't know this, that they had to try to top each other. Like, you buy me a Corvette, I'm going to buy you a Porsche kind of thing. And like buying each other houses and stuff, like, just for the hell of it. But, like, they show you some of the success of the band, and it just shows you like how unstoppable they were. And it's no doubt they were the biggest band then.
Oh yeah, for sure. The only one that was closest to them maybe is Guns N' Roses, and that was it.
Yeah. And then they kind of go into Tico drinking and Alec drinking, and John says that Tico and Alec were very mean drunks, which we've kind of known that over the years. And then David and Richie, they were like inseparable best friends, and then they would party and have too much fun. And then John didn't do any drugs other than that one time where he didn't like it. But what I really thought was that, like what David said something along the lines, we would party but we would never go on stage messed up, and we were always sober when we got on the stage. And maybe sober is not the right word, because they weren't. Means back up. They never got on stage messed up, and I really respected that. Like, there's other bands, like Motley Crue, that would do that, like, and then make mistakes and just sloppy and.
Roses, all that stuff. I would say out of all those bands, Bon Jovi was the cleanest band out of all of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, especially because John had such a focus and he was so driven on success, and drugs would obviously mess that up, which is our next topic here, was the whole Doc McGee thing. Not to kind of get into Doc's story here, but there are all these drug campaigns that got started, and John was very involved with that. And John even says that they would do things to keep him out of trouble, and John would be like, I don't know why I'm doing this, but it helps Doc, so he would do it. Then the whole Moscow thing happened. You know what's so funny about that is they were going to Moscow to, anti-drug campaign, but yet there were so many drugs on that plane. I think Richie was talking about that, how there was drugs on that plane. And obviously you got Motley Crue on the plane. That's,
Ozzy Osbourne.
yeah.
Ozzy Osbourne makes Motley Crue, look like peanuts, you know what I mean? When it comes to like the type of drugs and the type of shit that Ozzy was doing back in the day. I've heard the stories.
And then we fast forward to Nashville 22, and this is the first time we get to hear Phil X talk, and I absolutely love what Phil said. He was basically praising the fans, excuse me, the fans, and just kind of saying like how loyal we are, and how much we love the band no matter what and stuff. So I really admired that Phil kind of
Yeah.
stepped up and said that about fans.
And we've had this conversation before. We've had
Oh yeah.
this conversation where it's like, even if John, sounded the way he did in 24, in 22, and the tour was announced and the show was announced for tomorrow, I'd fly back from where I'm at right now and be at that show. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's just what the band represents to me. It's not the vocals, it's not the singing. Like, you
Yeah.
don't really see the issue at all at the show. It's like, you're there, you're sitting, you're with your friends, you're singing, and you're having a good time. It's like Bon Jovi's just providing the soundtrack to the good night. That's
Yep,
it.
exactly. And then we get to another, I vaguely remember this, but John is somewhere on stage, I think. And I think this is during rehearsals. And he says, I'm back, motherfucker. Like he felt so confident again in his vocals and was happy, and he felt good. He was excited, happy. And like, I think right after he says, I'm back, motherfucker, he goes down the stairs under the stage and is just excited and stuff. And then the very next scene, which is later on, post 2022 tour, you see John sitting there, and my heart just broke for him in this scene. He's holding it back, and then all of a sudden he starts to cry, really showing his vulnerability. And there he talks about how the band has trusted him all these years and always trusted in the direction that he wanted to go. Later on, Tego talks about, like if John wanted to go this direction, we'll follow him there. And I think that meant a lot to John because they always believed in his vision. And then John goes to say, that's why legacy matters because they believe in me. I thought that was pretty admirable.
Like they're brothers. Yeah. At the end of the day, they're brothers in the truest sense of the word.
And then, so I was at the Nashville show. And so I got to see, John in the middle of the crowd start out with prayer, which I haven't seen prayer start the show in years. So that was pretty cool. But what I really liked was the isolated vocals. And you listen to those isolated vocals, I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, John actually doesn't sound bad here. Like my personal opinion, I liked listening to him sing, And so I thought that was pretty cool. And then obviously the I'll be there for you moment. Bless you.
Thank you.
The I'll be there for you moment, with the victory. Let me back up. Obviously, I don't think I have to say it on this podcast episode, the way that they did I'll be there for you to finish the show. And just a side note, if that is ever the final show that the band will ever do, I can say that I was there and got to experience that. Go ahead and sneeze. Looks like you got to sneeze pretty good.
Yeah, like that weird, like that purgatory period where you feel a sneeze coming, but it's not all the way there yet.
Okay, we're back. And then so, so after the I'll be there for you moment, when John leaves the stage, and he looks back at the crowd one more time, then goes, you could see how happy he was. Where I think he wanted to be vocally and stuff. And then you see him go to his dressing room and stuff. And then, Dorothea pretty much tells him it wasn't great and you should probably think about retiring. And then so he starts to speculate retirement and stuff. And so then it takes us back to the end of the New Jersey tour, which I think this is where the two stories kind of cross each other. You're seeing the end of the 22 tour, and then we see the end of the New Jersey tour, which we see that the two shows in one day at the university because of the students raid in the university. So at the end of this New Jersey tour, we see the band is exhausted. I think almost every band member says it in the documentary. No one cared if the band was over at that time. They just wanted it to be over with. And this is in the trailer, and it still gives me go it still gave me goosebumps in the documentary when John says, "I want out of here." And what I meant was out of Bon Jovi. Every time I saw that in the trailer and even in the documentary, I just got all these goosebumps. It was, yeah. And then it goes into Doc playing all the I can't read my fucking handwriting here. So they kind of go into how Doc was playing sides and to selling this person this and selling that person that. And then Doc go, pretty much says, "You could always call me," to John. And then John goes, "Well, what if you're the problem?" And that I think that's how they end this second episode.
That's how the episode ended. Yeah.
Yeah. Was there anything you wanted to say about second episode?
What I'll say is this: Doc was necessary to get them to
Oh,
be the
absolutely.
biggest in the world. 1,000%. They couldn't have done it without Doc. But there's a saying, it's like what gets you here won't necessarily get you there. At that point, they're already the biggest band in the world. They've had, 8 number one songs, the 5 number ones on New Jersey, eight, and the other three, was Never Say Goodbye a number one song. I know Bad Prayer, Bad Name, and Wanted. So you have eight or nine number one songs at that point. At that point, you got a career, you know?
Yeah,
You can take songs.
exactly. And just having Doc on the podcast a few weeks ago, you're right. He was a big part in the band's success and knew what the band needed to do to get out there and just to have that direction. So now we get into episode three, which is called Brothers in Arms. Starts out with that Nashville speech again. And then they lightly touch. I thought they were really going to go deeper onto the Unplugged 1989. Surprised they didn't, but and then they talked about how the media, so this is kind of going into the 90s now, and how the media was making up rumors of during the New Jersey tour, or post New Jersey tour, I'm sorry, and it got pretty ugly with the press. You know how the media is, the press, they'll say anything for, nowadays clickbait or to sell a magazine back then. And so all five of the guys weren't talking with each other post New Jersey tour. They're all doing their own thing. And so they're reading all these articles thinking, okay, this is what John's saying about me, or this is what I'm, and none of it was true. And then so it started this friction with the band members. And like they said, some of them didn't really understand if they're ever gonna get back together.
Yeah, and like the same thing happened in 2013 when Richie left the band. Like every day you saw a new article from some made up source, a source very close to the band, if you will, that was saying, "Oh, it's about money, it's about this, it's about that." When that wasn't the case, so the media likes to lie.
Yep, exactly. And it just causes trouble. And then they show the lovely Dorothea, John's wife, and they talk about, getting married. And but the biggest thing was, because obviously, John was the sex symbol of the 80s. A lot of women loved John, and his looks really, did help his career too. Can't deny that. And so with the whole marriage thing, like Dorothea, and like band members and management were all worried that their career would start to go downhill because John got married, he was unavailable. So they, talked about that. And then they go into Stranger in This Town, which is Richie's solo album in Blaze of Glory. I've always wondered this, but they talk about it in the documentary about how John and Richie were kind of, there was some tension being built between the two because they're both, quote unquote, competing against each other with whose solo album is better. And who, because everyone thought, okay, John and Richie are, the glue that makes Bon Jovi, and, they're the ones who add to the success. But now you have them both separated, and so you want to say, okay, who's the bigger of the two here? And so that's what, as they say in the documentary, it was a rough time. There's an uncertainty and all that.
They're both type A personalities, right? So like look at, here's another band as an example, Blink-182, right? There are technically two front men in the band that sing. You have Tom DeLonge, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, and Mark Hoppus. For many years, like they broke up twice, because there can't really be two front men in a band. It usually doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're both type personalities. Like Richie just put out a song, that I Pray song is great. He's and seeing the both of them, as John Shanks said, with the sound waves, how they sync up perfectly, that's magic,
And so now we fast forward to Philadelphia, May 22, where John gets his initial doctor's appointment pre-surgery. And then I think he gets like the surgery like a month later in June, and he gets the surgery. You see him in the hospital bed, and that's like one of the scenes that in the trailer that broke a lot of fans' hearts was him in that surgery bed with a sign saying "I'm good." But then he gets told that he can't sing for 3 months. And then I thought the direction, so they go into the whole acting thing right after that. I thought that was kind of like an odd next thing to jump into, but In a way, it does go back to, Fire and Doc. Obviously Doc didn't like that John wanted to get into acting and stuff. And there was a falling out at an awards show. And Doc pretty much told John, stay in the rock band, don't venture out of it. And John wanted to venture out. And I think it was good for John to venture out, making a soundtrack movie on his own, acting and stuff, kind of trying different things. I think it was good for him. And then so there was a lot of hate being, questioned between the two. And so Doc got fired. We both know the story. John became the man. John got the whole band together with I can't Lou something.
Yeah,
The
they got
psychotherapist or whoever.
the therapist, and they went to like St. Thomas, and they had a little weekend retreat, if you will.
Yeah. And so, they all come together. And then so John has his vision. The band hops on the vision. And then so John becomes manager, obviously, with, Paul Crozier, as we both know, has been the band's manager for 30 plus years. And so the band kind of worked their issues out and keep the faith game, as we know. And, that was a fresh start for the band. They talk about, I didn't think they were going to talk about it, but they did. John's haircut, how that was such big news. And, it's crazy to think about.
Yeah, someone cutting their hair.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll fast forward to July of 22. It was 2 weeks post-surgery. John questions mortality, which I'm trying to remember where that came from. I think it was from the Elvis thing, wasn't it? He was talking about Elvis and realized, like, your
Yeah.
mortality. Because he talks about the Elvis movie. And during this time, his voice is really sore. He's got the beard. He's in his Red Bank home. And he goes down to the basement, and I know a lot of fans have been wanting this. I'm sure a lot of fans are happy about this, but they bring out Cadillac Man, which is phenomenal. And I hope that they release that one day. I'm sure they will.
I have a question. So I've heard the title Cadillac Man before. What's so special about that?
Did you not listen to it during the documentary?
I did, but
That's what's special about
it's a
it.
good song, but like I could have sworn this was around before, no? Or just the title was around
New
before.
Jersey era. But I'd love if they did the fighter. It was on the Access All Areas where John Richard in a hotel room, two guitars, and it's just a verse and a chorus, but it's like the fighter or something like that. I will not the one that's on What About Now, obviously.
There was another fighter.
It may not have been called the fighter. I forget what it was called. Moving on, they start to talk about Alec, his departure. And I was wondering how deep they were going to get into that, but they talk about how he was abusing drugs and alcohol in and out of rehab. And then in the early 90s, he was starting to really go downhill. And like John says, they had to fire him because of it. Well, this is the next thing too, was Hugh. So Hugh comes in, and fans like you and I and all the other fans in the diehard world, we've known that Hugh played a lot on the first four, five albums, from debut to Keep the Faith. And Alec was more of a touring musician. I was shocked that they actually put that in there, that Hugh was actually pretty much the recording bassist on all the albums, and Alec was the touring musician.
Why are you shocked about that? I mean, I think everyone knew that more or less,
Well,
if any.
people knew it, but I just didn't think they were going to bring that to light, And so that was kind of interesting. Then they call Hugh like something like Man Behind the Curtain or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, John's always called him the foundation, you know?
Yep, exactly. So, but yeah, they were pretty short about Alex's departure. I kind of wanted to hear more from Richie or Tico or David about that, just to kind of get their input a little bit on it. But maybe it's somewhere in the cutting room floor. And then another shocking thing that I never knew was I knew John didn't like Always, but I was shocked that David didn't think Always was any good.
I thought that was Richie, no?
That was David that said that.
Oh,
Yeah, Richie said he didn't like Runaway. David said he didn't like
okay, got it.
Always. And that was a shock. Like, so I wonder, was it the demo he was referring to, that's like on the box set, or was it the final version? Because then they talk about how it Always just kind of blew up. Then they get into, the whole These Days thing and how that was a fresh start because Hugh was on board now, and John and Richie were writing more together. And there's one part Richie says, Richie was like, I spend more time with John than his own wife. And and so what he meant by that was like they knew how to write together. And we both know how beautifully written These Days album it is.
Yeah, they complement each other. They're, partnerships like, John and Richie, from a songwriting aspect, are pretty rare,
Exactly. Another thing that kind of shocked me too with the documentary, I didn't think, because John has always kind of kept his kids' lives private, and especially like his daughter Stephanie, she likes to live a very private life, which I respect. I was surprised that they kind of went into the whole kids segment about how bringing their kids on tour and like showing like actual, and it made you love John even more because like you see him as a father, like they showed you like John in the delivery room, they showed John playing with Stephanie Rose, and then you see the other band members with their kids. I thought that was a pretty special thing to put in the documentary. I really like that. Then we hop right into 2000, which was the rebirth of the band. And then we've heard David tell this joke all the time, but like obviously It's My Life rebirthed the band and made the band big again. Like, so the critics were saying, well, Bon Jovi's back, and David goes, we never went away. Every time he says it, I always laugh. I don't know why, because I know it's coming, but I always laugh.
David definitely has a very good sense of humor. He's a very funny guy. We've spoken with him. I remember when we met him, the first time you and I met, we just he was like cracking jokes with us and everything, I
Yeah,
remember.
he's a hilarious guy. And then they talk about Bounce for real quick, and I would talk about 9/11, but I didn't realize there was a lot more songs that John wrote about 9/11 that didn't even make it to a demo recording, just lyrics. So hopefully those get uploaded to Backstage some at some point. That'd be really cool to see.
Yeah, well, it'll probably be in the Bounce chapter when that comes out.
And then they go, so then we fast forward to like somewhere in 22 where John is post vocal surgery. I think it's in the fall, and he is no band, it's just him and his Red Bank studio, and he plays the audio to Let It Rain. I think it was Let It Rain,
Yeah,
and then
it was later in.
he sings it, and I actually thought it was pretty good. Like, you could tell it was rough a little bit. But like at the end, he goes, that was like, that sucked, that was terrible. And I was like, it's actually not too bad, especially like when you're post. So the surgery was what, June of 22? So what, three?
Isn't it his first time singing?
What's that?
Isn't it his first time singing too, post-surgery?
I think so. There's only so much I absorb. So I'm wondering if I think that was his first time, or maybe. But regardless, 3 4 minutes after surgery, I thought he did pretty well.
Look, obviously there's cobwebs. There were cobwebs, and now he's in a better place.
Now we get to the fun part. And this is something that the fans really wanted to hear more about with Richie's departure, which we'll get into in just a second. But like, so we get introduced to Shanks. I've always respected Shanks' work. I do think, and we'll get into this when we get to Richie's departure here in a second, I think we needed someone new after What About Now. And
I agree.
And I don't say any, no disrespect towards Shanks. He's a great singer, songwriter, guitar player, producer, all great. I just think the band needed something new after What About Now. We'll get into that in just a second. So everything that Shanks said in the documentary, I really liked hearing. Shanks really had a lot of good input on things throughout the documentary. So I just want to throw that out there. And I think, was it David Ortego said that he kind of brought a lot more technology into the band? I remember who said it.
Yeah, I can't tell you.
So, and then him and Richie would compliment each other quite often. You know, Richie would, sh or I think Shanks shows Richie the intro, the boom, 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 the intro.
Bum, 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 bum.
To have a nice day. And so then they go into, the Who Says Success, which led to The Lost Highway, which is country influence, which went to The Circle, which come full circle. We know that story. But then we get into the whole Richie departure. I think like this is probably the biggest thing the fans wanted to, watch. So that they talk about how Richie was on painkillers and booze, drugs, and like you and I that have followed this band for years and years, we know, back in 2007 he was having problems with, alcohol, and had to go to rehab again in 2011, again in 2013. And John admits that he kind of was like album tour, and like there was like really no time for breaks and didn't allow any of the band members to have a break. And so that was kind of interesting to see John admit, yeah, we should have probably had a break in between The Circle and What About Now, especially because Richie wanted to put out a solo album and promote a little bit and tour it and stuff like that. And then they talk about, how Richie had some family problems with, Heather Locklear and had to be there for his daughter. But the big thing was, and to be honest with you, I'm kind of on Richie's side on this. It was just tired of the whole. Let me back up. I'm on the fence here, and I'll explain why. Richie was tired of the whole Shanks, kind of taking lead on things, and just think that the band. What was the word he used? The didn't sound like Bon Jovi anymore, and they sounded stale, something along the lines of that. But to be on Shanks and the band side, Richie also didn't show up to a lot of the sessions.
That's a choice that he made. So
Yeah.
my position is, so there's two things, right? My position is for the what about now aspect, you can't be mad because you made the conscious decision not to show up to a session. You know, you could have, then again, this was 2012, so I don't know how easy it was to back then to record a part back home and then, you know, send it back. Even then, you know, there was GarageBand. There was still, you know, GarageBand existed at the time. Pro Tools existed too. All these platforms did exist, but, you know, he chose not to show up at the end of the day. Regarding, you know, the situation of not showing up to, you know, Calgary, I could understand that, but there was a better way to handle it. Especially, you know, I don't know if you've read about, you know, Heather Locklear's issues, but it's really concerning. You, as a dad, you have to be there for your kids, and you know, he's unfortunately put in an uncomfortable situation where it's like, okay, I have to be there for my daughter. But the way he did it was pretty fucked up.
It's a tough spot, and that's why I can't choose sides, nor do I think we need to choose sides. I try to understand both sides, like with the whole Shanks thing. Like I do agree with Ridge. I think What About Now was the time where they needed to find a new producer, and so it was kind of refreshing to hear a band member say that. And when he was saying, it didn't sound like Bon Jovi, then the whole. I've heard rumors about this, but I never knew if it was true or not. The Fighter solo. I never knew that until last night, or at least knew it was confirmed. How Shanks did that solo, and that caused a bigger problem with Richie and the band. So Shanks did that solo, but Like I said, if you don't show up to the sessions, and at the same time too, he was also finishing up the recording of Aftermath, his solo album, and wanting to promote that. And so, he's probably busy with that. He's probably busy, struggling with addiction. And and then like you touched on, with the whole Calgary departure, just didn't show up. And what I do admire though is that Richie, I think it's in episode 4, where Richie says, "I don't regret the way that I left," or
No, I don't.
"I don't
I
regret
don't.
leaving, but I don't regret leaving, but I regret how I did it." And he apologized, and it's very sincere. He apologizes to the fans, and I really admired that,
So, personally, I at this point, I think, it's too little, too late at this point. Like, look, at the end of the day, it's, Bon Jovi is a band, right? And, it doesn't really make a difference to me whether, Richie is in the band or not, because I think I've said this before on the podcast. I've seen Bon Jovi over 30 times, and I've only seen them with Richie twice, both in 2011. And it's fair to say that he was, in the addiction cycle at the time, because this was maybe 2 months before he went to rehab, so maybe he was using. Good possibility he was using too. So I've never seen sober Richie. You know what I mean? But from what I do remember, I think he may have been going through the motions at some shows. But I don't necessarily, I think the apology is like 10 years too late. You know what I mean? Like, I remember in 2013 and 2014, he was very cocky about it when being asked about Bon Jovi. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, whatever, I don't care. I remember one, I think this was maybe in 2016, he was asked by TMZ, are you ever going to rejoin Bon Jovi? Oh, if they give me a good paycheck, I will, or something along that nature.
Yeah, there was never audio of him saying that though, so I don't believe he said
I think
that.
I remember here. I remember. I will try to find you that clip, but I remember him saying.
And so then we get into episode 4, which is legendary. It's called Legendary. And they start off the episode with John in 2006, talking about legacy. And then they go into Life is Beautiful, which I was shocked to they put that in the film. And Alex, who was on the podcast, the producer, editor, the previous episode here, he talked about how he found that song, just absolutely loved it and thought it was very fitting. So they play that while John is on his way to Obie's house in Delaware. And that was kind of cool to see. Like me as like a memorabilia collector and fan, I love seeing like all the little Bon Jovi tidbits that he had in like the Crush clock that they had during the Crush recording. I thought that was pretty cool.
I didn't catch the crush clock.
But I did. I like I said, I'm a weird guy with like memorabilia and
Didn't catch the Easter egg.
yeah. Rewatch it. You'll see, it's pretty cool. They talk about the prayer key change.
Yeah.
Then they kind of go right back into the Richie's departure. They interview Matt Bongiovi. And he thought like Calgary happened. He thought that just everyone would just go home and that would be it. But David Bryan and Bobby Bandiera stepped up, and they say it in the documentary. That's why they held on to, so a lot of people wonder, why is Bobby on the Lost Highway tour? Why is he on the Circle tour? Why is he on the What About Now tour? That's why.
I think
Because,
it was on the Have a Nice Day tour too, no?
oh yeah, you're right. And so that was the reason, just in case something like that happened, and it unfortunately it did. I'm just reading my notes here. And so Obie and Dot get interviewed, and they said that John was so, stressed and he was strained, and but he wanted to continue because he didn't want to disappoint the fans. And I think the interviewer asked John, "Have you and Richie tried to reconcile in the last 10 years?" And he goes, without like any hesitation, "Not for a lack of fucking trying." And
And that's why I don't believe the apology that he said, because it's like, yo, like if you're genuinely sorry, he will have done something to resolve that. Maybe he has at this point. I don't know, but this was shot in 2022, right? Or end of
22,
2022, maybe
23.
early. Yeah, 22 to 23. So that's about 10 years. So
Yeah.
at this point, I just don't think he gives a shit. And at the end of the day, you can't teach somebody to give a shit.
Yeah.
And I remember one last thing in the I think it was the People article, they reshot they talked about reshooting some aspects and Richie walking out because he wasn't happy about the way he was being portrayed.
So they bring up Phil X, which we know that story. You know, 2011, 2013, and but you know, they bring something positive to light in 2013 when they talk about how it ended up being the top grossing tour of the year or something like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So it, I think that having that in the band's corner kind of showed that the band could, excuse me, the band could continue on without Richie. I hate saying it, but it's true. And still climb charts and still be successful. And then, you know, they talk about, are they going to, you know, Nashville 22 or John's, you know, playing Hollow Man, which we've heard snippets of. And then, what else?
The
And
studio
then,
version of that sounds incredible, by the way.
what's that?
The studio version of that song sounds incredible.
Oh, I know. I can't wait to hear it. And I think the way that John kind of talks about it in the documentary kind of makes me understand why it's the last song on the album. I think it's fitting because it's like, who am I and who will I be? Or, you know, what's the future per se? Then they get into the Forever album. A lot of trying to think how I want to say this. A lot of John
Not
says,
forever. This is not for sale.
what's that?
This house, you said forever. This house is not for sale.
No, they go into Forever before This House Is Not for Sale, which was kind of a weird direction.
I don't remember. My brain is like totally like bird brain right now.
That's okay. And then so John talks about how Forever, some of it's about him healing, and we know it's about joy too, but he says that, you know, there's a lot of talking about healing and stuff, and he tells Billy Falcon, who's in the room with him, let's try to
Oh,
get out
yeah.
of that and put something joyful and fun. And so we get like all these clips of him perform, and there was one other song later on. He practices I Wrote You a Song, which is a new song on the album. And so it was nice that we got to hear some new music in this documentary. But like John wasn't happy with how he sounded. And I think he walked out for a second and stuff. And you could tell how he was still having vocal issues, you know, 8 months after surgery and still trying to perfect his voice for the album. That was
Yeah,
it.
like that's like the writing process more or less. You write something, you're like, oh, I like this, but this has good potential, but it's not there yet. So I related to that part,
Yeah.
because I have been Jon Bon Jovi in that scenario several times. It's like, oh, Jon Bon Jovi does the same thing too.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, then we get into This House Is Not for Sale. And one thing that I think my takeaway from it was like when David says, when we play that song, we think we're still fucking here, you know,
They are
because
still
it's not about, you
here.
know, all about integrity and all that. And then, you know, they kind of talk about how it's a 5-piece band again, you know, with Phil and Hugh and then, you know, John, David, and Tico. And then they talk about how Bobby's no longer there, which, you know, we've heard different things. And I didn't know if they were gonna, not to get into it, I guess, because they didn't talk about it, but you wonder if they were gonna get into why Bobby wasn't with him, if he just wanted to go in a different direction, or maybe just because his role was done after 2013. You know, then they interview Everett, which I love Everett. You know, they talk about him helping to build the vocals. Then they, you know, talk about a little bit about Matt Bon Jovi, John's little brother, about, and we know Matt's been involved with Bon Jovi for all these years, and he's kind of learned and grew, and now he's in management, you know, always been John's bodyguard, and Matt's just a great guy.
Oh yeah, he's up.
Then they talk about David's musicals. They go into the Rock Hall, and then they go into Alec's death, which I won't lie, I cried. That was probably like the heaviest that I cried when they start talking about his death. And obviously, the documentary was, the concept of it was developed in, spring of 22. And then obviously Alec died in June of 22, so he was never interviewed. They did their best to get as many interviews as they could through the years. But they talk about his death for a couple of minutes. He had a heart attack. Right after that, if you look on the coffee table in John's house,
Yeah, I saw
there's a
that.
book, and at the bottom it says, "It's about time." And I'm like, what is that? Like, is that going to be a future release that we're going to get at some point? Like, I don't know what, why, I don't know. Maybe something will come from that. I thought that was so cool that I was like fanboying really hard. That I was like, ooh, that looks awesome. Like, and maybe we are going to get a book or something,
It could be like a book of photos and stuff.
Then they get into, the whole 2020 album, which we know, COVID, politics, philanthropy,
Witness to history.
witness to history. And then Obi and band kind of open up a little bit more about John's vocals. And they kind of leave the documentary with like, we don't know what the future is going to be. We're uncertain. We might tour again, we might not. But
Sure.
John seems pretty optimistic based on, what he says in the documentary, what he's been saying in interviews. It seems like vocals are healing well. He's optimistic about the future, and we might get one more tour.
Yeah,
Or get another tour, which would be great. Yeah.
probably 2025.
And I liked that we got to see them do rehearsals of Legendary, and I loved the isolated vocals. I thought they sounded really good. I think it was the chorus that they did, wasn't it?
Yeah, you hear the got what I want because I got what I need, and like you, they were powerful vocals. They were
Yeah,
fucking powerful.
they were awesome. And then the documentary ends in memory of Alec John Such, and I cried a little bit there too, like a little baby. I thought that was a nice touch, putting that at the end there. But overall, man, this documentary was just incredible. I was just happy with it.
It's a thing that, fans like us have been dreaming about, so it's perfect.
Exactly. Was there anything else that you want? I know our brains are just running low right now, but is there anything that you wanted to say?
Nothing else. Nothing else. I just here. My one thing is that I wish they touched on These Days a little more than they did on American Reckoning, but that's other than that, it was perfect.
Yeah, I was they did kind of rush through, These Days, you Keep the Faith, These Days. They rushed through Bounce, Have a Nice Day. I get it. I mean, those weren't like the band's biggest years. I get it. So, but that would have been kind of cool to get some insight on more of those albums. But anyway, I will end the recording. Thank you for binge watching with me tonight and then coming on to do a podcast right after. And as always, thank you, buddy.
My pleasure. See you guys next time.